The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by HP. Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjog All. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now, here's Sunjog All.
Hello and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. And as always, we invite you to join the discussion on Twitter and look for this show as hashtag BimodalIT. Today's topic is bimodal IT challenges and lessons learned. And we have Sahal Lahar, who's the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer with Brooks Brothers. Hi, Sahal. Good morning.
Good morning, Sanjog. How are you?
Very good, sir. How's life?
Doing great. We are off to a busy start already in 2016.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, as we are getting started, we wanted to touch this topic on bimodal IT. So the concept was introduced as two-speed IT, and then we spoke about that as a bimodal IT. And it's been adopted by a number of companies. There has been an interesting journey. Some people have had challenges in the way they try to get value out of it, and then others who are still on the fence trying to see whether this is for them. So our goal today is to actually look at what has been the journey like, what have been the challenges, what are successes, best practices, and gotchas and pitfalls that you have to watch out for. So that said, if we are looking at this evolution of bimodal IT, of course, you know, there is a business case around it, but then there are people who say that not sure if it is for us. What is a qualification, if you will, a criteria of qualifying whether bimodal IT is for an organization, or that's something just people who are naysayers are the ones who are making excuses?
So in my opinion, I think bimodal is really the path forward, and everyone needs to adopt it because that is going to be the only way that you can survive in the digitally driven world that we live in, where consumer demand and customer demand is at an all-time high, with customers more empowered than ever and really demanding more and more from businesses. So I think if you are in any kind of business that has a component where you sell service or market to customers, then bimodal IT really is essential for you to speed up transformation in your organization and allow these new capabilities to be delivered rapidly.
So would you say that the reason we actually had to introduce that we cannot really do away with our legacy infrastructure or applications, and we needed that predictability of what's working there, but that predictability comes at a cost of being slow. And in order for you to move ahead at a speed where innovation is in the forefront, that's where you needed to create another capability. And now that you got two different speeds at which you're trying to run, and that's why the bimodal IT concept was born, is that what we are saying fundamentally?
Fundamentally, yes. That's exactly what we're saying. I think the traditional, you know, what's known as kind of mode one in the bimodal world, which is very linear, keep the lights on, very predictable, focus is on, you know, the old way of development, waterfall development, etc. That people have just realized that is not able to keep up with their demands of the business anymore. And, you know, in the even before bimodal IT started, there was shadow IT, right? Or you know, stealth IT, where people would kind of do these initiatives you know, in the margins, behind the scenes, and they would kind of do it without alignment with all of the business owners, without alignment with IT. And really, you know, I think bimodal IT gives you the ability to get rid of the shadow IT or the stealth IT, which is very risky because you don't have the right alignment and the right consensus, and you also don't have any kind of governance around that. So things can really get out of control, and initiatives end up not being successful in that model. So this is really what has led to what is known as mode two, right, within bimodal IT, which is the agile and really innovative approach to responding to the organization with, you know, with where IT is not seen as a bottleneck or the people that are saying no, or the people that are saying, sure, we can give you that, but we'll see you in 18 months. It really requires everyone to adopt a new mindset.
Would you think about this as a stopgap? Because if you have legacy infrastructure applications you're dealing with, and maybe you have a modernization play in the works, if all that is done, do you think we can come back to one mode versus carrying the two? Or this is a process, or this has to exist forever, because you'll always have things that you have to make work in a predictable fashion, but then you also want sandboxing happening for innovation.
Yeah, so I think that it will exist for the foreseeable future, because I think you're always going to have systems that are more in steady state, and you really need kind of the mode one type of oversight and maintenance to those, where you know not a lot's changing. You're kind of keeping the trains running, keeping the lights on, but you're going to need to continue to innovate with other systems. You're going to need to continue to innovate with new capabilities in other areas. So I think that it's, in my opinion, it would be unrealistic for this to be a short term kind of craze that goes away and we merge back into one mode, because I think that it requires very different disciplines. It requires very different cultural mindset, and that I think are some of the key lessons learned, and we'll talk more about that as we get later in the show. But that I think is really been a wake-up call to IT organizations to show that there are different ways of working, and we need the people that want a mode one type role where it's predictable, and then we also need the people in the mode two roles, and those are two different roles. Those are two different types of individuals. We have to respect that and not fall into the trap of expecting that one IT team can kind of wear both hats effectively.
Now, if you were to wear the hat of, say, a pseudo-analyst and paint the picture of the state of bimodal IT today, do you think it is fully cooked in terms of what it offered, the way we had built the practices around it, and the way the results have been seen by organizations investing in it?
I think there's still work to be done. I think we have a basic construct around bimodal IT, but honestly, it is still very new. I think people are still continuing to refine the finer workings and around the model, around the governance, around cost attributes, value attributes, and so there's still, I think, work to be done to get it fully mature. And at the same time, I think, there's also an element of you live and you learn, and so the first organizations that have adopted bimodal IT are sharing some of these lessons learned and kind of recalibrating the model to say, when we first started out on our journey, we felt that you could follow these steps, and what we've really found is that we got two-thirds down the list and really had to change our approach. So I would say we are still, you know, we're still not quite there in terms of being fully mature, but as more and more organizations are adopting it, I think that is going to come sooner rather than later.
Let's take a quick break, listeners, and when we come back, let's look at the various phases of this whole phenomena or this new paradigm shift that we are looking to adopt. So you start with conceptualization, and then you try to come up with a business case. Subsequently, you do some planning, then you do execution, and then you do governance. So if you look at these different phases where bimodal IT has to be picked up and you have to run with it, where are the challenges? What have we seen truly where there are hiccups and or gaps in knowledge and experience which is holding us back? Please stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. HP is proud to sponsor this program. Find out how the HP as a service solution for SAP HANA can help you gain instant, impactful business results without capital investment by logging on to HP.com. Transform information into intelligence and a competitive advantage with a full spectrum of SAP HANA products and services from HP, a global SAP hosting partner. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sun Jog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sun Jog All.
Welcome back. So, Sahal, you did mention in your last response that there are some issues. It is still evolving. So if you were to split it a little bit, or maybe dig a little deeper. So in the conceptualization phase or business case development and funding phase and planning and execution and governance phases, any change or any paradigm shift have to go through this. And then perhaps you could have other technology-related evolution that needs to happen, the tools, technology, processes. So if you were to kind of go into each of those and kind of give your take, give your perspective on where do you think the challenges are or the gaps or things that we have to improve upon?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I would say that really, to me, it starts with identifying the initiatives and determining which initiatives flow through mode one and which initiatives flow through mode two. People have a misconception that, you know, any new capability should flow through mode two, which is not correct. Really, the way to look at it is to look at what is the type of capability we're trying to deliver. Is it really just an enhancement to a back-end process in the supply chain world? Because if it is, then you know that can absolutely continue to flow through the legacy mode one, where you have kind of interim releases and you kind of bundle those, and there is no, you know, there is no driver to have, you know, an imminent build or an imminent delivery of that capability. So I think that's the first thing. The other one is that you know, cost and value. We touched on this a little bit briefly earlier before the break, and I'd like to get into that a little bit more. You know, a lot of times there's a misconception that in mode two, you really have no governance, and you know the teams can just kind of go at the speed of light and get things done and deliver everything. And I think that is the number one pitfall is bimodal IT really requires, it still requires rigor. And, you know, maybe you can go with slightly lighter governance in some areas, but the governance piece is still very important. And likewise, the alignment in terms of your executive team or your business sponsors and leaders within each of your functional areas, everyone really needs to be aligned with what are the priorities that we're working on and how are these priorities going to be delivered and how do they drive us to the to get to the next level. So cost attributes, I mean, differ between mode one and mode two. And I think the key things that are different is that in mode one, you have low uncertainty. In mode two, you have high uncertainty. And as such, because you have high uncertainty, what you'll find is that you are looking at a more innovative culture, a more innovative mindset that requires not just your internal talent to be recruited accordingly, but also the external partners that you work with. You know, in mode two, you're more likely to work with the smaller vendors, the startups, the niche players, the boutique firms. In mode one, you know, typically people work with the more tried and trusted vendors and the proven vendors. And then, you know, obviously there's also the, you know, in terms of the failure rate, right? In mode one is typically a low failure rate because there's a long planning period and it addresses the risk and allows for testing and various iterations. The issue with mode two that organizations really have to adopt in terms of the mindset is that it's more of a fail fast, fail forward, and fail small. And so you really need to time box each idea or each initiative to get a set period of time. And within that time frame, if you've been unable to kind of achieve what you're trying to do, then you need to go back and really evaluate if this is an initiative you need to move forward with. So I think these are some of the things that, you know, because it's a new way of thinking, it's really, like I said, culturally a big shift. And, you know, it's not that in the old world people did not want to be transform or be innovative, but you know, it was done with different levers, and it was done with a different mindset.
So since this is such an internal to IT type of a reorganization or change management, do you see any help, assistance, and sponsorship needed from outside, and blessing for that matter, from outside other stakeholders besides the folks within IT for this to become successful?
Absolutely. I think this is that is maybe one of the other misconceptions that you know, bimodal IT is, because of the way that the term has been coined, and with IT in the name, that it's really something internal to the IT organization. But really, I think it requires an enterprise-wide mindset shift to recognize that we are now going to be working in a different way, to recognize that certain initiatives are going to flow through this you know, alternative delivery model where we will be more agile and we will be less restricted. There will be more of a focus on innovation and rapid delivery, rapid prototyping, speed to market. And I think that that alignment, I mean, ultimately, right, you still have to work with the entire executive team as far as managing the portfolio of initiatives so that everyone understands which initiative goes through which path. And similarly, you know, I think the other key thing is if you are going to do bimodal IT right, your the teams that you develop for Mode 2, which is the new agile way of development and delivery, those really have to be cross-functional teams, right? Because you need business involvement, and the business has to also adopt this alternative way of working, because if they're used to the old way of working where, you know, you kind of kick off a waterfall type project and you tell them, hey, here's the key activities we're working on, and the key inputs from you are going to come in these phases. It kind of, there's peaks and valleys to that, and there's in the valleys the business can really go back and go back to their day jobs. In bimodal, they really don't have that luxury, because we're continuously innovating, and we're continuously prototyping something or testing something, or, you know, working on defining something. So that really needs to be something that is not just an IT initiative, because if it is, then you will not be successful.
So if you are to look at the specific areas in which you feel we may be looking at, you know, we will be reevaluating how we work within IT and in terms of how we interact with business when we are trying to adopt bimodal, which would be the top candidates?
So, you know, I would say the top candidates would really be, you know, I think, again, it starts with culture, right? And so you really have to, you know, define this new mode and define how it's going to affect your culture. And it starts with everything from talent acquisition and how you staff up this organization. That to me is kind of the top one, and it's first and foremost. And then, you know, once you have that, then you really need to move into, you know, figuring out the governance model, coming to a balance around, you know, you can't have the exact same governance as you've had in the past, because, you know, traditionally on projects, if you go with kind of the full project management and governance, you're probably consuming about 10% of the project resources. In this new world, you have to be leaner from a governance standpoint, but still have the right controls in place so that we're effectively evaluating the initiatives as they move along.
If you are to look at the culture which needs to be in place, you know, like a set of prerequisites, if you will, before you kick something off.
Yes.
What would need to be in place where you feel, okay, if I'm going to ask for a change, like any other change management, we should have the core to be in place. What would that core look like?
I think the core is really, you know, being open-minded and recognizing that the innovation is going to force us to work differently. And if we're serious about innovating and transforming rapidly, then, you know, we are going to have to work in a very different way than we've been accustomed to. So I think that's really where it starts. And I think the other piece is the one that I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, you have to also change the culture from one where, you know, in the past, any kind of failure in some organizations is seen as a very negative thing. Whereas you have to recognize that now in bimodal, when you're working in mode two, there is going to be, you know, there are going to be initiatives that are not successful. Every single thing every single innovative idea you come up with is not going to go into production and you know, hit your customer-facing systems. They are going to be ones that are just not right for the organization. You may start off with an idea that you think is a great idea, but after you create the prototype and you work on it further, you'll realize that it's really just not aligned with your organization for whatever reasons. And in those situations, you have to foster a culture where, you know, failing fast and moving on is okay, and that we are going to fail. We're going to fail forward, fail small, and not, you know, belabor stuff and try to put a square peg in a round hole and keep working on it longer than the allotted time frame, because then, you know, you will not be meeting any of your objectives under this new delivery model.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And Sahal, let's talk about the specific set of resistance or objections that people may have raised, which you had to get over or convince them otherwise so that they came on board for something like this. Because this is going to change the way they work, the role they took on, the hours they work, the quality and quantity of work that will be put on their plate. All of that would change as a result of this transformation. So what objections were the ones for which you had to deal with and get them to get on the bandwagon? Please stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. HP is proud to sponsor this program. Find out how the HP as a service solution for SAP HANA can help you gain instant, impactful business results without capital investment by logging on to HP.com. Transform information into intelligence and a competitive advantage with a full spectrum of SAP HANA products and services from HP, a global SAP hosting partner. Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sun Jog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sun Jog All.
Welcome back. So, what resistance, that's what we wanted to understand, is what resistance and or objections did people bring up who were part of this team inside who would get affected and or people outside who may eventually be from business or from executive management? What did they bring up and how did you handle them?
Absolutely. So I think the first one is really just, you know, the being nimble and the time element, right, which everyone is not accustomed to working in that model. So as soon as you shift the paradigm from the old world and say, hey, we're now going from long cycle times, which used to be months, to short cycle times, which are weeks and in some cases even days, to work on these new innovative capabilities, that immediately raises flags, and there are people that will just question the ability for the organization to move that fast, and they will create barriers to say, well, you know, we're going to have poor testing if you're cutting the cycle time. We're going to have poor deliverables because we're not spending the right amount of time and the right rigor. But really it's you know, helping them to understand that you really are still providing rigor in this process. It's not that you kind of get free rein to go work on these initiatives and not do testing and not define them correctly up front. It's quite the contrary. It's just that your focus shifts from, you know, a typical, if we think about the ERP world in the old days when people were doing ERP projects, you know, one ERP project, let's say, took 12 months to deliver a single release. The reason for that is not because there was, you know, one capability that was complex, but really you were bundling numerous capabilities, and some were complex and others were not. And here you really are, you know, isolating capabilities and working on them individually. And really, once you have completed one, then you move on to the next one. So, you know, if you were to extrapolate the 12-month timeline from a traditional ERP implementation, and you take that into the digital world now with delivery of these innovative solutions in mode two, you know, you're still spending time and you're still spending cycles on definition and testing and getting alignment from your business partners, but you're concentrating that into a much shorter period of time. So I think that is where a lot of the turmoil starts. But you know, I think the other one is really, you know, getting that business involvement, because I think that you know, again, there's a misconception that you can do bimodal IT and run all of the stuff in mode two, and it's business as usual for the functional teams and the business, you know, owners. But that is not the case either. As we talked about earlier, you have to be very close to the customer. The customer or business owner needs to be very hands-on and very involved. It's really more of a business-centric way of working in, you know, in the traditional world. It really could be more IT-centric, because the business could kind of hand off a set of requirements and then go away, and you wouldn't need to really engage with them again until you got into the development or pieces of the testing, etc. So, you know, I think those are two key ones. But I think the other one is really just the ability to work with ambiguity. And, you know, again, some people need very prescribed and predictable outcomes on projects and a very predictable set of steps. Here, you know, you really have to handpick folks that are good at new and uncertain projects, and they're okay with the ambiguity. They're more nimble and can react dynamically on the fly as things change, because every single initiative you deliver under mode two is not going to have the same, you know, prescribed steps. Some will you'll be able to skip steps, and others you'll have maybe additional steps that you have to take. So I think these are some of the key barriers from a people standpoint. But one other point I would like to make is that you know, this is also all predicated on the fact that you have a digitally enabled core. And what I mean by that is that, you know, if you're a 100% mainframe shop and you now try and introduce bimodal IT, you know, that's going to be only marginally effective, because your underlying infrastructure and your underlying systems and processes really are just not, you know, digitally enabled. And therefore, regardless of the great number of ideas and capabilities you come up with, and, you know, those will not, you will not be in a position where you'll be able to deliver those back into the systems, underlying systems, because of the inherent constraints in some of these older core and legacy platforms. So that's also a very important piece, and I think that kind of comes back to another question you had asked around, you know, when do I adopt bimodal IT as a leader or as a CIO or any kind of change agent? When do we do that? And I think you really have to be very honest with yourself about how not just your people are able to handle it, but also your underlying systems and your underlying processes. If you're it's not just a systems issue, but if you're an extremely bureaucratic organization with a lot of red tape and, you know, five sets of approvals that are needed for every change to move to production, then you're going to have to rethink all of that before you adopt bimodal.
Now, when any organization would start or any leader will take this on, they would have some idea about where they are supposed to get to, like what's that holy grail, right? So mm-hmm. what would you say is a set of measures of success that you would put in place and then measure when you have reached there or if you've not reached there? What's a way to kind of correct course as we go through this journey? And what are those measures of success someone can put in?
Yes, absolutely. So I would say that it really needs to start with looking at first defining the right governance model. And once you have the right governance model, then the key metrics, there's key metrics and attributes that will be part of your governance process that will allow you to assess the success of your initiatives in the new way of working. So, and you know, as an example, when we talk about some of these attributes, you know, you obviously have to look at business outcomes. You have to look at faster time to market of the prototypes with the features, and really looking at how do we maximize the business impact of technology. And in order to really evaluate your progress on this journey, you have to have very, very specific metrics and attributes that you're looking at in terms of, you know, it all starts with the time period, right? I think when you start this journey, I think it's helpful to say each idea gets a set number of days. And that is kind of the construct that you go into this with. Because again, coming back to my point earlier, if you, you know, keep trying to belabor an idea because it didn't initially work, let's say within your 5-day allotment or your 10-day allotment of where doing these prototypes, then you know you really need to cut bait on that particular idea and move on. And I think that the key challenge here is that it is not black and white in terms of being able to gauge your success, because for all of the initiatives that you're successful with, there will be, you know, a percentage that you had to punt on. And the ones that you had to punt on, really, ultimately, you know, if you look at a traditional ROI analysis or you look at a traditional way of measuring success, it would be, you know, what is the impact that initiative X had on the business? And the reality is that in this way of working, there are ones that didn't work at all. And so, you know, there was zero impact or zero ROI. So you really have to kind of balance your evaluation process and your metrics to say, you know, what is it that we're trying to do? And to me, the best way to do that is to look at your overall strategic priorities. And ultimately, you should be continuing to evaluate every single initiative against a strategic priority or strategic initiative. And just make sure that you have that alignment. And as you move, you have to continue to, you know, enforce the set number of days. You have to enforce the governance. And you really also have to, you know, be able to have, you know, you have to understand that you won't be able to check every box that you did check in the legacy world. So you're not going to have, you know, detailed requirements and specs to the same level of detail that you had in the old world, but you really have to say that you have to develop according to specific characteristics and employ methods that are now new and different from the way that you worked in the past. So there's really, you know, I think this is a tough one, because again, I don't think it's a black and white thing where I can just rattle off five metrics and say evaluate these and you'll be fine. But you know, a lot of these are, you know, have soft benefits, soft skills, and so the evaluation of of success is a lot more, is it a balance between art and science?
So since you mentioned that, and that is at least a candid approach to recognizing that not everything is, you don't have a crystal ball, essentially. Now, that does have an impact on the way you build a business case, the way you get, become the Pied Piper where everybody follows you, because, you know, not there is not 100% clarity. But then coming to who do you choose for the mode one or mode two, that becomes an issue. And then another one is to say, okay, now that I've lived through this journey, the chaos or the uncertainty, if I had to relive this journey again, and knowing mm-hmm. that I would not know everything exactly, what would you have done differently? One is how sure. to choose people. Second is how to work with them to make this happen differently.
Absolutely. So I think on the people one, A very good litmus test is that your team in mode one, I would say, needs to have an operator mindset, and your team in mode two needs to have an innovator mindset. So that, I think, is the most fundamental thing you need to look at when you're building the teams, is that, what is this individual's core capability? Are they more of an operator and someone that needs kind of predictable steps and outcomes, or are they more of an innovator and risk taker and someone that's willing to, you know, work with ambiguity and embrace it and kind of forge their own path as they go? So I think it really starts with that. And you know, I think the question you talk about in terms of, you know, what are some of the key learnings, and if I were to do it all over again, I think what I would share in that regard is that you really can't mix modes on the same team. You have to keep teams separate. But I think sometimes the risk is that when you're getting started, you really want to have you want to start small, right? Because that's you can kind of go through like a big bang approach and just have no mode two one day and have fully launched mode two on the subsequent day. But sometimes the pitfall with starting small is that some of your team members will wear multiple hats. And I think that is problematic, because then it takes away from the focus that is required and the way of working for mode two, as well as mode one, are inherently different, and so you must make sure that I think you start small, just one or two projects, and you have you really differentiate which projects are going through. But once you've differentiated the projects, you also clearly articulate which of your resources are working on which mode, and ensure that that both modes are working towards the aligned priorities. Because ultimately, you know, that's very easy sometimes to lose track of. Is, you know, you kind of get more into the shadow IT or stealth IT mode, which is someone has an idea and they just think it's a cool idea and they want to do it without really seeing if it's even aligned with the strategic impact or strategic priorities rather for this year. So those, I think, are some of the things that I would share. And I think the other one is the other thing I would say is don't wait. Don't wait till you have a perfectly defined model or a perfectly constructed team. I think I would encourage everyone to start sooner rather than later, start small. And I would also just emphasize everyone being open and collaborative, regardless of which mode you work on, because ultimately that collaboration and communication is extremely important to the success of all initiatives.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And let's talk about the risks. Because any such initiative that you have, definitely you start because you feel that there are benefits, and you see some of them as soft, other as hard benefits in terms of dollars and other value that it could create. Now, we also have to balance risk. And what risk are we talking about here? Is it security risk? Is it any other form of uncertainty that we may introduce within the people or the processes or technology in the process. So I'll explore all of that and with an underlying tone of risk management. Please stay tuned, listeners. We'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network. HP is proud to sponsor this program. Find out how the HP as a service solution for SAP HANA can help you gain instant, impactful business results without capital investment by logging on to HP.com. Transform information into intelligence and a competitive advantage with a full spectrum of SAP HANA products and services from HP, a global SAP hosting partner. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjog All. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That number again is 1-866-472-5790. Now, back to the show. Here's Sunjog All.
Welcome back. So, risk management, take it away.
So I would say that the risk, really, the biggest risk here is with cost, because if you don't have a good governance process, then you know you have the tendency to maybe have the meter running and dollars burning with nothing to show for it, and that's why you know having the set number of days for a particular idea or initiative, I think, is very important, because you really have to constrain it upfront. And based on what you find in that period of time, you go with, it kind of gauges where you go with this initiative. So in addition to cost, I think the other risk here is when you first get started, the folks that are new to this way of working may feel overwhelmed and feel like they're being spread too thin. And in that world, you end up, you know, not delivering anything well because, you know, you don't have the right focus. And so, again, what I would say on this is that it's extremely important to have very, very clear roles and responsibilities and identify who's working on a particular initiative. And really have accountability around accountability that's tied back to, you know, whether or not you're meeting a business goal or strategic priority. So, you know, I think some of the other things that I think about as risks would be, having the mode two team get too big too fast. And I think that it's important that you keep the Mode 2 team small and you really keep them very focused, because when you're getting started, you have to start small. But in addition to that, I would say that the ranking of initiatives or ideas really should be taken outside and of the project team, because those people in mode two, it really need to be focused on initiatives that have already been prioritized by the executive team or some other governance body that says, here's what we want to focus on, rather than having the mode two team being bogged down by doing prioritization as well as then trying to execute on these initiatives. And then I think another common problem is that because each initiative can be very different and can vary greatly in terms of what it is that you're trying to deliver or what part of the business it's touching, there's a tendency sometimes for teams to waste time and waiting for everyone to get up to speed. And what I would say with that is that you can address this with really an upfront onboarding process, and the onboarding process really would be focused on the idea owners spending time with the team for that particular initiative in talking through the initiative and describing the tasks that they believe we have to go through. And, you know, I think this is extremely important, and you know, some people have said that every hour that you spend on onboarding saves you, you know, 5 to 6 hours of actual work effort down the road, because you're really helping people to get up to speed and set expectations very clearly up front. So I think these are some of the key risks that you know, I would share based on what I've seen with our own application of this. And again, you know, hopefully that is helpful to everyone to look at these and to avoid making these mistakes.
Now, one last question about the leader, the very leadership that they have to demonstrate in order for them to initiate, manage this transition into bimodal IT and run it successfully. What traits should get introduced or reinforced as a leader?
Absolutely. So I think the leader has to be very dynamic, very nimble, and must be a true change agent that can navigate through ambiguity and to really drive alignment across the organization. Because again, as we discussed, the initiatives are going to vary greatly, and they're going to need to build consensus. And I think having good relationships with all of the business partners is I think extremely important. But if I were to just summarize, you know, and prioritize the key traits, I think it really has to be someone that is very dynamic and not afraid of ambiguity.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Sahal, for sharing your thoughts on how organizations can make the best use of this paradigm, which is bimodal IT, and bring most value for the business.
No problem.
Thank you so much again.
It was a pleasure to be on the show.
Thank you so much. And listeners, please like us on Facebook, search for CIO Talk Radio, and be sure to follow us on Twitter. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Please join Sanjog All next Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 9 a.m. Central Time, and 10 a.m. Eastern Time for another hour of CIO Talk Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. CIO Talk Radio is brought to you by HP.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.